counsel. Our next case this morning is 523-0453, People v. McCafferty. Good to see you again, Mr. Trejo. You were here yesterday, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
So you got to spend a couple days in Southern Illinois.
Yeah, I love it.
That's good to hear. Ms. Strong, are you ready to proceed? Go right ahead. And please state your name for the record.
I will. I also wanted to offer my condolences about Justice Welch. I probably argued in front of him 100 times, and everyone knew that you need to talk about a car to get his attention.
That was exactly one of our conversations this morning at breakfast about cars and airplanes.
Yep. We always talked about, my dad was a car man, we always talked about my dream car that I wanted, and he would ask every few arguments, did you do it yet? I was like, no, I work for the government. But when I finally did it, I actually did think of him. I really did.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, and I know we're not cutting into your time, but it is, I think that's part of the grieving and healing process is to have these stories. Yeah. And to hear that, I mean, not only did he touch the people in the court, but also the folks that came before him on a regular basis. So that's, I greatly appreciate it. I'm sure his family would absolutely greatly appreciate that story.
I've got some other doozies too, but they're probably not appropriate.
You know, what we may need to do is have a get together here at the courthouse and everybody just, swap stories. And
that's a good idea.
Do that. That may be something we talk with the clerk about later today. That's a great idea.
Okay, now I'll do my job.
I'd rather we talk about Tom Wells, but we didn't have a job to do.
Especially this one, but yeah. Okay,
if you're ready. Go right ahead.
Okay. I am Paige Strawn. I represent Phil McCafferty. This is a reasonable doubt argument, which I know are probably the most difficult ones you ever hear. Particularly difficult in this case because there are 6 counts of predatory sexual assault and then an aggravated domestic. This is a situation where Phil McCafferty was the stepdad figure to this child, AZ. The allegations are different versions of predatory, you know, like penis and vagina, penis and mouth, hand on organ, a variety of those, most of which were alleged to have happened in June of 2017, and I believe one in April of 2018. This is an odd, odd case. I want to lead with this. The jury was out longer than it took to present the evidence at the trial. They had 4 questions, and they came back once and said they couldn't get to a verdict. To me, that is a setup to explain that this wasn't an easy case, that there's no reason to question how any of these contradictions affected the jury. They absolutely did. It wouldn't have taken that long. And I understand that we have to give deference to the jury because that's their job. I also think we can't ignore the fact that in sex cases, it's a whole lot different because of the difficulty of the jurors to even hear the evidence. I almost wish there was a separate category of reviewing reasonable doubt in cases like this, just because of the emotional difficulty. But I'm not in charge, and so that's not the law. But I go into this knowing all of that, but I wanted to make sure that you were aware that this wasn't a jury that was out for 30 minutes. They weren't out for 2 hours. They were out longer than the presentation of evidence. And that's important. So this situation is rife with evidence you would expect to hear, but didn't. The evidence that you did hear, completely inconsistent. The complainant contradicted herself from her CAC interview to her trial testimony on really significant things, hugely significant. Also on things that wouldn't seem like they're that important, but actually are. She was contradicted by the testimony of her mother, Felicia, on pretty important things. Let's start with the most important thing. It is obviously the most graphic. AZ was very, very clear about the first time there was actual sexual intercourse between the two of them, penis and vagina count. She was very, very clear about when it happened. She had gone with Mr. McCafferty to visit his family in Maryland, where he's from. They'd flown. She claimed that the first incident happened when they returned home. Her mother wasn't at home. They returned home, just the two of them in the house. And that was the first time of actual penis and vagina penetration. In her CAC interview, she said, hang on, it was in his bedroom that he shared with her mother, and that he climbed on top of her and put his penis in her vagina. Very clear in the CAC interview, that's what happened. At trial, a completely different story no one had ever heard before. This time, she said, he put her on top of him and told her to put his penis in her vagina because it would hurt less. And that hurt less thing really stood out to me. I was trial counsel, so that really stood out to me. Because we'd never heard that before, and that's a level of detail that was significant enough for her to say it at trial, but never, ever, ever before. Direct 180-degree contradiction. I think that's big.
Remind me, what was the time frame from the CAC interview to the date of trial? How much time?
It was significant. 4.5 years or so.
Okay.
It was significant.
So, I mean, this is a child, so her memories, obviously, after 4.5 years may not be, her recollection may be different. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think that can happen, and I think there's room for that. I think when every single fact is contradicted, it's a different ballgame. And the fact that it is the first time that they had that particular act, when she said there was a series of events that went on for some time, the very first time, I think that's a little more memorable because it is so traumatic. It's not like she forgot if she went to the grocery store that day or not. It was pretty big stuff. I think that makes it a whole lot harder to forget. And that is a big difference, 180 degrees difference between what she said at one point and what she said at another point. And it's many of the things that she said at trial she'd never said before, ever. Another one very important. She said in the CAC interview that he never used a condom. Never. At trial, she said the very first time they had sex, same thing that she can't remember if she was on top or bottom, they did use a condom and it broke. And there was great panic. And there's no confusion about whether they used a condom. I mean, I can understand why a 12-year-old might not be real experienced in figuring that out. But it broke. They talked about it. They looked at it. And Mr. McCaffrey was very upset. And then she described some other things, like how he went to buy her a Plan B at CVS or Walgreens or whatever. She didn't know what a Plan B was. And that was clear. So that's an interesting another question mark about her memory, about the what I would describe as probably the most traumatic event of this entire thing. That's a little concerning. Another thing is, they moved homes. Okay, they lived in a house on Lafayette Street for a while, and then they moved into the home that they later lived in altogether. On Lafayette Street, she told in the CAC video that there was just only touching there. No actual, like, contact other than touching outside of the clothes or just touching in general. At trial, she first said there was only touching, was asked a second time. Anything else? I don't know for sure. That's what she said, I don't know for sure. She was asked a third time. That time she said, okay, there was touching outside of clothes, but also inside of clothes. I guess if we'd asked 6 or 7 or 8 more times, there would have been even more information. Not because it's true, but because she wasn't giving the right answers to the prosecutor in the front of a jury. That's why they kept asking, and that's why she kept saying more. Not because it's true. That sounds like a people pleaser to me, or someone who picks up on the cues pretty easily, and her answers weren't satisfactory, so she increased the intensity of them. The memories are so vague from her at that point. If she can change the answer just by being asked over and over again, if she's not sure, how's the jury sure? It's certainly questionable. Another really big difference between the CAC interview and the trial. She said that he made a habit of choking her. It's what he did. It's part of the thing that he did. And that plays a little bit into the aggravated domestic battery that happened on the last day that I probably won't be able to get to. But she claimed that she had bruises on her neck from that. At trial, she said not only did she have bruises, but she told her three friends about the bruises and their presence so they could see, and then he did it. She never talked about what their reaction was, which is a little peculiar. One of the people she told was Hope Burt, who was supposedly her best friend, but that's not what Hope Burt said when she testified, because she did testify, and she didn't say anything about seeing the bruise. Never had a DCFS hotline call about an 11 or 12-year-old with bruises on her neck. Wouldn't have a teacher who ever said, what is going on here? Kid played softball so much that Felicia claimed that a mom told her, called her and said, why wasn't your kid at practice one day? So she's got a relationship with, you know, moms of other players. Somebody wouldn't call up and say, what in the world is on your daughter's neck? But even better, AZ told her mom, because her mom noticed them, they were hickeys. She didn't remember her mom's reaction to that. Well, I can remember mine if I'd said such a thing at 11 or 12. I wouldn't be standing here today. Felicia testified she never saw anything. She had no idea, no concerns of any type. I don't think that's very credible. Now, maybe a child can mix up her memories a little bit. Maybe they change over time. But a mother who is finally told this has gone on in her house and she didn't know, I bet you she has recounted and relived every single day in that home with him trying to figure out what she missed. But she testified none of those things happened. She didn't notice. There was no bruise. She never saw bruises. Also, she did allege that on the last day before all this ended, she was choked by him. Oh. She went to the doctor.
Go ahead,
finish. Okay. She went to the doctor who noted no bruises at all. The doctor's findings did not support any penetration. There were petechiae in her throat that could have been from oral sex, but she denied oral sex to the CAC interview. And the doctor said if it had been from violent oral sex 4 to 5 days before, it wouldn't be there now when she saw her. So they had to have happened in between times, and she was never around Phil, ever. So big points I just want you to look at and give a serious thought to. This one's different. This one's different. And I think that it bears really close scrutiny. So we'd ask that you reverse his convictions. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel. Any questions? Mr. Shelby?
No, not at this time.
Ms. Moore?
Thank you.
Actually, I have your rebuttal time. Here you go. Go right ahead.
The state would first like to express its condolences regarding the loss of Justice Welch. It is a great loss to the legal profession.
Thank you.
With that, may it please the court, counsel, Adam Trejo on behalf of the people of the state of Illinois. Defendant argues that the evidence was insufficient to prove him guilty of 6 counts of predatory criminal sexual assault and 1 count of aggravated domestic battery. The state takes issue with the argument presented by opposing counsel. It's basically opposing counsel is asking this court to reweigh the evidence and substitute its judgment for that of the trial fact regarding credibility determinations. In addition to that, defendant alleges that there was no physical corroboration relating to the victim's allegations of the predatory criminal sexual assault. That is not needed. Corroboration is not needed to sustain these convictions on appeal. The testimony of one single witness is sufficient to support a conviction. Moreover, there was physical corroboration, which the state will emphasize later on in its brief. The state would also like to point out that defendant is alleging that the victim's testimony was inconsistent with a forensic interview conducted approximately 4.5 years later. That forensic interview is not included on appeal. So pursuant to O'Brien, any omissions within the record are presumed to be against the appellant who has the burden to supply the record on appeal.
Let me interrupt you there, counsel, because I have the CAC interview, and wasn't that supplemented at some point because there was some issue with, in fact, either the clerk's office or a technical glitch, because I know we've had some technical glitches as well with it.
At the time of briefing, at the time the state briefed its argument, it was not on appeal, and I'd like to emphasize that the attorney who briefed this case is no longer within the office, and I am arguing this off brief. I got the record and the briefs, and so at the time of briefing, it was not on appeal.
But it's possible that subsequent to briefing that it was in fact supplemented.
That is possible.
Is that correct?
That is possible. But even if this court reviews the forensic interview, those differences between the testimony, that's up for the trier of fact to weigh the inconsistencies and determine based, is this victim credible or not? And as opposing counsel highlighted, the jury took its time. The jury took its time to review the evidence, to review the interview, to review the statements. This wasn't a quick and easy guilty, members of the jury. It is not. They reviewed all the evidence and determined that this victim was credible. And I'd like to highlight the physical corroboration that coincided with her testimony. On April 7th, the victim testified that the defendant made her have oral and penetrative sex. On April 8th, the next day, the defendant choked her because the victim did not want to have anal sex with him. After choking, he also slammed her on the ground, and she also hit herself on a door by the garage. 4 days after these events, April 7th and April 8th, she was examined by a doctor. That was on April 12th. At that examination, the doctor noticed broken blood vessels in the back of her oral cavity, consistent with violent oral sex. The doctor also testified that she noted a left bruise on her arm, consistent with the fact that 4 days prior, the victim testified that she was thrown on the ground and choked. So there was physical corroboration regarding the allegations and the testimony provided by the victim. The state does not want to re-victimize this individual who testified at trial in front of the jury about these heinous acts the defendant committed against her. Does this court have any questions regarding any of the six counts? There were many counts, different time periods, and different manners in which this crime was committed. Counts 1, 2, 3, and 6 were alleged to have committed by the means of sexual penetration within the time period of June 2017. That was following a Baltimore trip with the defendant and the victim. They returned back. They were residing in the Evergreen House. AZ testified when they returned that they were naked in bed, told her to take her clothes off, get in bed with him. Defendant made her put his penis in her mouth, and then the victim got on top of him. And then the victim got on top of the defendant and have her insert his penis inside her vagina so it would hurt less. That are the elements alleged within counts 1 and 2. Penetration between the penis and the vagina in June 2017. This is consistent throughout the other counts, counts 6 and 3, counts 4 and 5, count 7. The victim testified to the elements necessary for the state to prove the allegations as alleged within the manner the state alleged them to be. Does this court have any questions rather than regurgitate the sexual acts committed against this poor victim? Does this court have any clarification on her testimony at trial and if it failed to prove the elements of the offense?
One quick question. Yes. Remind me, did the jury come back with a guilty on all of the counts?
Yes, guilty on counts 1 through 6, and which is the predatory criminal sexual assault, and guilty on count 7, aggravated domestic battery.
Thank you.
Yes, I'd like to emphasize the victim testified to all of the acts, all of the time periods. There was testimony regarding her age. She was under 13 at the time the offenses were alleged to have happened. The defendant was born in March of 1990. He was over the required age under the statute. All the elements were testified to by the victim, the victim's mother. There was corroboration, physical corroboration by the doctor regarding the specific counts. Counts 6 and 3, which was the April 7th incident that the state emphasized earlier in its argument. But yes, the testimony was there. The evidence was there. The state pleads this court and implores this court not to reweigh the evidence, not to substitute its judgment of the fact for the credibility determinations. The jury did its job. The jury took its time. The evidence was there. Any further questions?
Justice Moore?
No questions.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The people of the state of Illinois respectfully request that this court affirm defendant's convictions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm going to ask you right away about the CAC tape. Am I correct? Was it, was that by agreement state or was that by order of the court?
Getting it supplemented?
Correct.
Agreement of the state. And even crazier than that, I didn't notice that the exhibit wasn't there because I could quote that entire thing from having done the trial and I already had all that. Then it, when they pointed it out, I almost had a stroke that it wasn't in there. We got it from, we had Richland County supplement it after much argument about they don't have to. And then it showed up blank. So now we're doing
it. But we had it.
Yes.
And it was agreed to by the state. I want to make sure. Okay.
I still had a copy of it and the Attorney General certified that yes, that is the actual video and it was supplemented.
All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And that was a mess. It was a situation for sure. but it is there and we waited for a while for the state to have the opportunity to amend their brief and they didn't do that. So that's where it ended. The argument just made that one witness is sufficient to support a conviction, of course it is. That witness needs to be credible. That's the basis of the entire thing. In this case, you can't say that it is. She also admitted she was a liar by lying to her mom and any number of other things. If she was credible, we would have no argument on this point. Nothing about what she said was credible at all. I do want to point out, though, about the standard here is it sometimes feels a little bit like a rubber stamp. The jury said it, so that's that. And that is the decision in most of these cases. But this court also, 2 years ago, last year, overturned a bench trial verdict on reasonable doubt where the child said, I don't know for sure if I remember what happened. It was People v. Blue. I was an appellate counsel, but I could have been because I was trial counsel on that one, too. You reversed it outright. This child also said, I don't know for sure about some of the things that she had alleged. So it's something that is not off the table. That's why you get the big bucks. You've got to do the hard things here and digging into the details of what was said, what wasn't said. Those things are significant and specific to this case that you don't see in every one of these cases. So I just urge you, I beg you to actually look deep at the many, many contradictions there are. I would also point out, when talking about Dr. Winters, she mentioned, obviously her testimony was a big deal, talking about those petechiae or whatever they are. I did want to point this out. She's done sex assault exams for 40 years, and she didn't know what those were when she saw it. And she, I think she consulted with some other people, I think that was her testimony, and that came to her that that's probably what it was. But she also testified wouldn't still be there after 4 or 5 days. That's pretty important, too. So, who knows what it was? We don't know. I don't know that that's corroborating. So, my light's on again. So, are there any other questions? If not, just repeat my request that you reverse his convictions.
What was the name of that case that you cited a minute ago?
People v. Blue. Blue.
Blue, okay.
David Blue.
You wouldn't happen to know who was on the panel, would you?
No. Sure don't. I was just so happy about it, I just kind of took the win and went on. So, yeah. It was out of Williamson County. Thank you very much.
Anything
else?
I was busy trying to think.
Was it you?
I may have been.
It was a predatory case. A doctor child.
It was just a program.
Okay. Sounded familiar. Do you have any final questions?
I don't. Thank you.
There's no question. All right. Thank you, counsel.
Thanks.
We will actually take the matter under advisement. We will issue an order in due course. Did you...